by joining us?
No. Council will please come to order. Welcome everybody for the afternoon session. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales? Fish?
Here. Okay, we have a single time certain. Carla, would you please read it?
Item 731, refer a measure to city voters, to city voters for the November 8, 2016 election, establishing a 3% tax on recreational marijuana sales in the city of Portland, with revenues allocated to drug and alcohol treatment, public safety investments, and support for innovative neighborhood businesses by amending city code chapter 6.07 and 5.04.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, President Fish. And if I could have my staff and those coming up, please. What we have before us today is a proposal to refer a ballot measure to voters in November that would establish a 3% local tax on sales of recreational marijuana for businesses operating inside the city of Portland. The state legislature currently taxes recreational marijuana sales at dispensaries at 25%. That will be lowered to 17% in 2017, meaning that a 3% local tax will set a new tax-based rate of 20% for Portland businesses for recreational sales. Of course, this council has previously decided not to tax medical sales. Medical sales will continue to be tax-free under this proposal. It's important to note that even a 20% tax is significantly less than what businesses pay in Washington, which is 37%, or Colorado, where the tax is nearly 28%. Note that earlier this month, the city of Beaverton voted to refer a 3% tax to voters in November, with revenues dedicated to expenses related to impaired driving resulted from recreational marijuana use. And many other cities around the state are determining whether or not to refer a tax to the voters. The reason that we're all thinking about the 3% tax and referring it to the voters is because that's the maximum that the state allows us to ask for, and it required that we refer it to the voters at a general election in an even year. So that's why a number of jurisdictions are proposing a 3% tax. The 17% tax that the state will be charging starting in January, of that, the city only gets 10%, or 1.7% of the state tax will supplement the police budget for enforcement. Council will remember that we have chosen to set permits for recreational marijuana businesses on a cost recovery basis, which will be reviewed annually and make sure that we continue to pay cost for service, no more, no less. Our colleagues in the Revenue Bureau anticipate that a 3% tax could yield around $3 million a year. We are proposing that Council should identify and allocate these to this money to three dedicated areas in the annual public budget process. So there will be a fund in which the money would go to, and it could be used for specific purposes identified in the code and in the ballot measure. The ballot measure is much more likely to pass if there's a nexus between the source of the revenue and its dedicated uses. This also meets my long-term value of looking at who pays, who benefits, and considering whether that is fair. In closing with my remarks, I'd just like to read from Mayor Hales' speech in October of 2014, when the council unanimously passed a 10% tax on recreational sales without a vote, without referring it to the people. We were hoping to get in before Measure 91 passed, but we've never enacted that tax. And I will have to mention today that I'm wearing green and gold, not because of the Timbers, as which is my usual reason for wearing green and gold, but because, of course, green for marijuana, but also the proponents of Measure 91 promised that there would be taxes that would help support services, and that was one of the reasons that many people supported the ballot measure. And Mayor Hale said when we were doing the last tax in 2014, "We've been down this road before. In long, long ago, alcohol was illegal. Then it was legal and regulated through the state, through the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. In theory, that wouldn't necessarily put any more costs on local government. In reality, what we found is that the intersection between liquor and neighborhoods means there are costs for the city. There are costs in negotiating friction between loud bars and neighborhoods. There are costs associated with people who drink too much and get in the car and cause an accident. So we've been here in that sense before, in that we do know that no matter what the state legislation says, in this case in a form of initiative, we will end up having to pay some of the community costs. This time around, it may be possible for us to be... this doesn't make sense. In the script from the... This time around, it may be possible for us to say that we intend to collect a reasonable tax in order to pay for some of those costs, and probably only for some of those costs. So that was very prophetic on behalf of the mayor. To discuss the allocations and projected revenues, Claire Adamsick, a senior policy advisor on my staff, and Thomas Lannan, the director of the revenue division, will now provide us with the proposal, which we developed and amended based on input from industry representatives and every member of the council.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Claire Adamsick. I'm a senior policy advisor for Commissioner Fritz, and I'm also her liaison to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
Claire, please take the full 2 minutes.
Thank you. I will. As the commissioner mentioned, in October 2014, just before the passage of Measure 91, which legalized the sale and consumption of recreational marijuana, council unanimously adopted a 10% tax on local sales. This city code was never enacted, but it forms the basis for the code, which will be amended, as shown in Exhibit A1 in your packets.
Can I just, Commissioner Fritz, can I just seek a clarification? My understanding was we put a placeholder for a 10% tax in because we have been told that legally it would strengthen our position. I don't remember us taking an official position on the tax or how it would be spent, but we were encouraged that strategically this would give us put our foot in the door to allow us to make that decision.
We actually adopted code how we were going to collect that tax, and that's why this proposal is an amendment of that code. So it's currently in city code. We never moved to collect it because of the things that the legislature did.
Right, that's not quite my recollection, but I'm go ahead.
So the two primary areas are chapters 6.07 and 5.04. So the sort of the key points in 6.07 that will be amended are reducing the tax from 10% to 3%. Updating definitions of terms to reflect language that's currently being used in state statute. Clarifying the exemption on the sales to medical marijuana card holders. And allowing for the option of the city to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the State Department of Revenue to administer the tax, if that makes sense once the state's program has been established. And Thomas Lannan can speak to that in further detail in a few moments. And finally, the new code language in Chapter 6.07 identifies primary city services to which the funds may be allocated, chosen on an annual basis through the city's public budget process. And the second code amendment adds a new section to Chapter 5.04 funds, and it establishes a recreational marijuana tax fund to manage revenues. When late last fall, in late September, the council adopted the city's marijuana policy and established the marijuana policy program, there was public acknowledgement that the city's constraints in addressing anticipated public health and safety impacts of drug and alcohol consumption. Stakeholders that were involved in the policy development since the summer, from the marijuana industry, public health field, and the community at large, shared their desire to address emergent issues such as education on wise use, reducing access for minors, support for first-time business owners, and programs to support drug and alcohol abuse prevention and treatment. And as the commissioner mentioned, the marijuana policy program itself is a cost recovery-based program. Licensing and application fees cover a small but robust customer service, permitting, and compliance enforcement team. And just for current reference, the current numbers on marijuana businesses in Portland who are selling or have applied to sell marijuana to recreational customers is 111, and 94 are currently in operation. Many of those are recreational dispensaries who met the distance requirement exception and have, were in operation and are selling recreationally. So the Oregon State statute, this is for reference also for members of the public, allows cities and counties to refer a 3% tax on recreational marijuana sales to voters in the upcoming general election. So this is not verbatim the language, but it's essentially the summary of that language. that gives that directive to cities and counties. And this is the city's first opportunity in the general election to address gaps in key city services linked to the impacts of drug and alcohol consumption, while at the same time collaborating with members of the marijuana industry who will shoulder that administrative burden. So with input from the industry and from the community, we've determined three primary areas to which a potential tax revenues could be allocated. So the first area is drug and alcohol education and treatment programs. This could include the service for things like the support service coordination team under the Police Bureau's Behavioral Health Unit. The city in the upcoming fiscal year has dedicated $1.7 million toward those services in addition to two full-time staff, one of whom is an officer. And it provides housing, as you are aware, I'm sure, provides housing and treatment services for chronic drug property crimes offenders and offers 60 places for low barrier and alcohol and drug-free housing. Other funding could be directed to partnerships with service providers to support rehabilitation and employment readiness training, and we will hear from some of those service providers during testimony today. The second priority area is public safety, support for police, things like support for police drug recognition experts who identify drivers under the influence of alcohol and marijuana, and other as well as other police resources. Firefighter support for firefighter paramedics, as well as for transportation safety infrastructure, infrastructure projects, with a focus on potentially on support for Vision Zero priorities, which include speeding, disobeying traffic laws, impairment, and traffic design. The third and final priority area that we've identified is support for innovative neighborhood small businesses, specifically women and minority-owned businesses. This could include, just as examples, big business incubator and training programs such as PCC Climb or PDC business development programs, economic opportunities as well for people impacted by cannabis prohibition, one of the issues that folks are facing in terms of a barrier to market entry or to a job is the expungement of their past records, which typically costs around $1,000. So a possibility could be something like grants to organizations that would help with that, that process. So allocation of the funds will be based on actual revenues. And as the commissioner mentioned, council will determine how and where to dedicate funds in the annual budget process each year. So now Thomas Lanham will share some of the specifics on the revenue estimates and how the tax may be administered.
Actually, Claire, can I ask a question?
Of course.
The assistance to small businesses, it wouldn't just be to businesses that are in the cannabis industry, right? It could be other small businesses as well?
Right. So, I mean, there are a number of sort of emerging industries. You could look at areas that are that consider themselves craft industries. We heard last year a robust discussion from makers. So that's something that council could determine.
Good afternoon. I'm Thomas Lanham, the director of the Revenue Division. And I'll just speak briefly to two points, the revenue estimate and the administration of the tax. Regarding the revenue estimate, a number of governments and even private research firms have attempted to model revenues of proposed legalization and sales tax regarding marijuana and have largely failed to accurately project that revenue, so we're very mindful of that. Most of them have been quite low in their projections. That said, we chose to model our most recent estimate on the city of Denver, Colorado, because of the similar size and because of the longevity of the tax that they've had in place. Of course, we made adjustments for population and for the differences in the tax rates. And so we believe the low end of the revenue yield, and that's the gross yield, would be about $3 million. It could range up to five, potentially more, but $3 million should be a pretty comfortable floor in terms of the revenues. And that's the numbers that you see reflected in the fiscal impact statement. With respect to administration of the tax, basically it would be comprised of two components. There's the collection expenses themselves, and then the fund administration expenses. So I'll talk about each of those separately. With regard to the collection expenses, the hotel motel tax currently administered by the Revenue Division is the program that we have. It is most similar, in fact, it's very similar to the proposed marijuana tax in terms of size and complexity and structure. The marijuana sales tax could therefore be collected with a similar level of effort, about one, two FTE, and related materials and services expenses in the range of $150,000 to $250,000 annually. This includes part-time on-site security for the large cash remittances that we would anticipate receiving in the month following the close of each quarter. As you know, it's an all-cash business. A number of efforts are being made at the state level, and there are some cottage industries springing up to try to assist with those sort of financial transactions and getting out of the cash arena, but they're not up and running yet, so that sort of security would be necessary. And there's also a one-time startup cost of between $50,000 and $100,000 just to get up and running with the database platform and some necessary back-office functions. So as Claire said, while the Revenue Division can and will collect this tax if necessary, we believe the first best option for collection may very well be the state of Oregon under authority of ORS 305. Centralized collection should, in theory, allow for the least administrative burden for both marijuana businesses and government as a whole across the state. The League of Oregon Cities is in ongoing negotiations with the Oregon Department of Revenue on behalf of Oregon Cities, but it remains unclear what terms the state will offer the League and, by extension, all cities in Oregon. Obviously, the primary points of consideration include the costs and the terms and conditions of collection, administration, and enforcement. It is likely the state will want to substantially adopt a single uniform set of regulations and rules, so the ability of individual cities to request customized treatment is expected to be quite limited. Ultimately, a go, no-go decision on state collections will entail a cost-benefit analysis of the city versus state costs, risks, details of administration, and enforcement. If the resolution to refer this measure is voted to voters is passed by the council, Revenue will take a more assertive position in negotiations both with the League and with the Oregon Department of Revenue. The other expense, that's one of the expenses related to the administration of the tax, the collection, that was that piece, and the other expense is related to the administration of the fund itself. So the fund administration expenses include fixed city overhead, such as general fund and EBS charges, which amount to about $33,000 per year for similar funds that Revenue manages, and these are required by city financial policy, fund accounting and audit services, disbursements and transfers, preparing the annual report on fund revenues and uses, possible contract administration if external agencies contract for some of the funds, annual budget requests and related public and partner involvement, if that's desired. The total cost for all fund administration would be about $50,000. Could be less, but it wouldn't be less than $33,000, which is the floor for any new fund in the city. And those fund-level administrative expenses would exist whether or not we contracted with the state to collect, because the state's collection fees would be a separate matter. So that concludes my remarks with respect to revenue projection and expenses, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Claire, to what extent do we have to resolve these questions now, and to what extent do they impact sort of commitments we make to the public about the overhead and the cost of collection?
So when you're talking about commitments, you're talking about commitments to funding allocations? Specific,
no, or the things that Thomas just went through about whether we go with the state or we have the different questions about how we administer and collect the tax. To what extent do those issues have to be resolved before we make a vote on a referral?
My understanding from conversations with the city attorney and with Thomas and his team is that and basically the language that's provided currently in the code, and I can find the section for you, is that it allows for that opportunity to enter into that relationship with the state, but it doesn't bind the city to doing so.
So, it doesn't.
So the answer is no.
Questions, yeah. Colleagues? So do you have another panel?
We do. We also have Andrew Scott, the city budget office director, who has to leave it in a little while. So if anybody has any questions for the city budget office.
Andrew, why don't you come forward?
I don't have any prepared remarks, but I'm happy to answer any questions. We've worked with the commissioner's office on some of the issues and budget-related issues in here. So
I guess the primary issue here is the current language gives us broad latitude to allocate the funds into sort of general categories, and then makes the council through the budget process the final decider. So you're the independent budget office. Is there anything in that mechanism that gives you any heartburn?
Yeah, I think that mechanism will work. And as we go through this, it won't surprise any of you that as the city budget director, I always advocate for broader flexibility. I think it's, since we don't know what future priorities will be, I think it's better for revenues that come into the city that council will have more discretion in the future about how to spend those. And that's always my position, I think, on all the revenues we bring in. That said, the allocations here, it's worth noting these would not be general fund resources. They will go into the recreational marijuana tax fund, and so they will essentially be, it'll be a separate fund. But it will go through the normal budget process. I think the idea is that decision packages would come forward in terms of how the money that's in that fund gets allocated into these categories. And I think the categories that are there, although they are limiting, they are broad enough to include some existing programs, some new state programs, city programs, and so it does allow some flexibility.
And just to be clear, as I read the text, you've been clear in your statement that this doesn't go into the general fund, it goes into a separate dedicated fund. But let's take a potential example. If this passes and the funds are generated, and at some point the council chooses to use the funds to invest in the service coordination team or an existing program, it might end up that it frees up general fund money for other purposes, correct?
I think that's correct, yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate you being here. So we have two panels. First, industry representatives. We have Jesse Horton from the Minority Cannabis Business Association and Jeff Sugarman from the Oregon Cannabis Association. Could you come up, please? Welcome. Thank you for being here. Thank you for partnering with us and figuring out the language on this.
Commissioner, actually, I'm not here on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Council.
I'm sorry.
Council.
Thank you for
Wallstetter is here on behalf of the council. If you wanted to bring in those,
sure, if you'd like to clarify that. Anybody, just call up whoever you'd like to come up. But, Jesse, I know that you're here representing your organization. So.
Yes, thank you very much. And I'm also on the side representing just being a business owner in the cannabis community here in Portland. My name is Jesse Horton. I'm here as a business owner, as I mentioned, a cultivation and a dispensary business owner in Portland, but also here as a chairman of the Minority Cannabis Business Association. I think as a business owner, I can't say that I'm necessarily a fan of any taxes per se. However, I am all for paying my share, especially if the taxes are imposed in a fair and responsible manner. We're embarking on a new and unique industry, and so understanding what fair and responsible really means takes a lot of thought and a lot of input from different perspectives, both different perspectives within the industry and within the general community. And so as a result, you know, therefore, I would like to really thank Commissioner Fritz, as well as her office and her staff, Oni, doing just that and making sure that we had different perspectives in crafting this language. Cannabis legalization affects so many aspects of business and community, many of which have been addressed in this tax. For example, public safety and health, child care, economic prosperity. This tax is even allocated for things that aren't, or very worthy causes that aren't directly tied to cannabis legalization, including general education, firefighting, as well as innovative business assistance, which I think are all very, very important things within this allocation. However, one issue that is directly related to cannabis reform that not one city in the United States of America has addressed yet is the fact that everywhere across the country, including our great city of Portland, Oregon, cannabis prohibition enforcement has disproportionately affected communities of color, playing a major role in mass incarceration and the multitude of criminal charges resulting from the failed war on drugs. I think this has left so many communities in our city and so many families with unjust hardships. Many that are struggling, that we're still struggling to overcome, and I share some of these hardships myself. Economic hardships directly relating to having difficulty getting a job with cannabis-related charges. I've had that myself. I have cannabis-related charges. Luckily now, I'm in an industry where, you know, it's not that much of a problem, but before, it definitely was. Educational hardships. I actually, unfortunately, as related to one of my cannabis charges, I had a scholarship that was taken away from me, and I had to sit out of school for a year and work in order to get those funds back. That's happening all over the country. And, of course, overall disenfranchisement, voting rights, just really feeling like you're under the gun as it relates to criminal justice enforcement. And I think that by voting on this measure, that amongst other things will assist with record expungement, criminal record expungement as it relates to cannabis, will assist with job assistance, as well as economic opportunity and education for communities most disproportionately affected by cannabis prohibition enforcement. I think our city has an unbelievable opportunity to make an historic step and continue to be a model for fair cannabis legislation, not just in our state, but across our nation and really across the world. So I just really am all in favor of this language. And thank you again for taking in so many different perspectives to craft something that I think, again, will be very historic and beneficial for the community.
Thank you so much. Who would like to
say? Mayor Hales, members of the council, my name is Jeff Sugarman. I am here today representing my employer, Groundworks Operations. I'm happy to report that this week we received our first City of Portland business license for our medical dispensary at 2519 Southeast Belmont. We are also applying for processor and production licenses and hope to open a second retail store in the downtown area in the next few weeks. Before discussing the ordinance, I do want to say that my frequent experiences with the staff at ONI have actually been very positive. I found the staff there to be professional and responsive and very courteous. They have a very difficult job and they are working hard to do it well. We as applicants also have a difficult job and we are working hard to do it well. The licensure process here is more demanding and significantly more expensive than other jurisdictions where Groundworks is operating, including the cities of Eugene and Washington County. The program and process is working here, but we think it can be improved. To the ordinance itself, I think Commissioner Fritz did a nice job of outlining where the tax is at present. With the overall tax rate going down a total of 5% when the OLCC recreational shops come online, I think you will see little opposition from cannabis consumers or cannabis businesses about the implementation of the tax. This was a well-discussed issue at the legislature over the last two sessions, and we all came to a broad agreement on the structure going forward. And frankly, we've heard little mention of the tax rate in the shops that we now have open right now. Additionally, we did pass legislation last session to ensure that no medical patients ever pay a tax either in a recreational OLCC store or in a medical marijuana dispensary. So we think it's most appropriate for the council to ask voters if they want this tax. As far as the allocation of those resources, you've heard about the three broad areas. We think that the language in this ordinance is sufficiently broad so that these tax dollars can be used for a wide range of items. A number of us do intend to participate in the ONI budget process, and we will be glad to work with all of you as you make decisions moving forward on how to spend these dollars. If we are going to use some of those dollars, cannabis dollars in areas that we think will help those who have been disaffected or who have been disproportionately affected by cannabis prohibition, I have a couple of areas I'd like to outline quickly. One is, as Jesse mentioned, expungement and job training. We still have far too many people who have felony convictions from marijuana charges that are today would be considered legal. Helping these citizens expunge their record will free them to find housing, get jobs, and rid their lives of the stigma of felony convictions. So this approach will help in a number of areas, and I think it can be done pretty cheaply. On the area of drug treatment, if the city can use cannabis tax dollars to aid in preventing drunk driving or assisting the county or local nonprofits in attacking alcoholism or opioid abuse, we think those are cannabis dollars that are well spent. Using these tax dollars to fund police services may be a difficult issue for some of the constituencies who will be voting on this. Rather than debate the merits of that, which I think we will do over time, I do want to ask you to consider that these legal marijuana shops are already offsetting public safety costs considerably. Not having to cite or arrest adult marijuana users frees up time and resources for other needs. Additionally, we are seeing that about $15 million is being spent each month right now by recreational cannabis consumers buying at 7 grams at a time. And that's a significant amount of money. And in fact, it means that these pot shops have become our front line of defense against black market sales. Portlanders have willingly come into the shops, and I think they are very glad to have a safe and legal place to go. I have heard of very few situations where police were called out to any of the dispensaries. And I think it will be very interesting to see trends in arrests and citation reports on marijuana-related charges. If we do want to use these cannabis tax dollars for police services, let's please at least recognize that these businesses are a growing part of the solution and that they are really not much of a public safety problem at all.
As you said, Jeff, you'll be participating in the extensive and robust Office of Neighborhood Involvement budget process, so that's an argument we can, or a discussion we can have then.
Absolutely. The fourth area is jobs and job training. We are already seeing strong growth in jobs in this emerging cannabis industry, and that will accelerate as more facilities come online. Any funds we can use to make sure these small, often family-owned craft businesses are successful will represent huge wins for our neighborhoods and downtown and for the people that we are directly impacting. Additionally, I want to mention that we are gratified that we have opened up an ongoing dialogue with Commissioner Fritz and the marijuana industry over the last month, and with an eye towards looking at how we can improve the licensing program as we move forward. We think that's going to be a very valuable process. And finally, just to say, our cannabis businesses are already paying dividends in jobs and public safety. Now cannabis consumers are going to be paying a tax directly to the city, and I think we can accomplish a lot of positive goals if we use these tax dollars wisely, and we're more than happy to help in those discussions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Hales, members of the council, my name is Matt Wallstatter. I'm filling in for Amy Margolis, who's traveling for work. I'm a member of the Oregon Cannabis Association and a co-owner of a dispensary in the Hollywood District with my wife, Megan. We live in Northeast Portland with our son. I'm here to testify on the marijuana tax on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Association, which is Oregon's leading professional association for the cannabis business community. The City of Portland proposed tax referral to the November ballot coincides with the reduction of state taxes so that the timing should not put more pressure on the legal market to compete with the illegal market. The OCA applauds the city for being thoughtful about the timing in that regard. As the council knows, the most effective way to combat the illegal market is to support the legal market, and price sensitivity is a key factor. However, I would like to take a moment to reflect on the history of the ability to enact a local tax on cannabis. The Oregon Cannabis Association worked during the 2015 legislative session to balance the interests of local governments to enact up to a 3% tax on cannabis with the interests of cannabis businesses in creating a limited framework for time, place, and manner regulations. This was seen as a compromise to meet the needs of local governments to generate specific local revenues, meet the needs of cannabis business, and to meet the needs of the cannabis business community in avoiding excessive or punitive taxing and regulation, as well as to provide incentive for local jurisdictions to allow cannabis businesses. The City of Portland has adopted one of the most extensive regulatory frameworks for cannabis businesses in the state. Many of our members, including me, have found it difficult to successfully navigate the process. While some of these difficulties are growing pains, other challenges are based on the hyper-intensive regulatory process that ONI has developed. This process far exceeds what any other business needs to go through in this city in order to be allowed to operate. While I have never applied for a liquor license, I did look on the web at the requirements, and I've attached a comparison of what it takes to get a liquor license versus a cannabis license. The OCA has appreciated the recent outreach from Commissioner Fritz's office to discuss how the marijuana program has been going, what is working, and what is challenging. We have requested greater transparency in the marijuana management program. Specifically, we are hopeful that the city website would begin posting regular updates, including the number of marijuana business applications filed, the number of marijuana applications processed, the length of time to obtain intake appointment from the time of request, the number of licenses granted, the number of licenses denied, the revenue generated from licensing fees, the cost of administering a license, and the cost of the overall program, and the number and nature of complaints filed with the city against cannabis businesses. In addition, the OCA has requested a specific and immediate change, which is to remove the unnecessary and unworkable requirement for off-site video storage. The OLCC originally had this as a requirement, but then dropped it after working with stakeholders to assess the needs and feasibility of this requirement. In some cases, businesses are located in buildings where there are simply not the technology to meet this requirement at all, or in a reasonably affordable way. The OTA has also requested that cannabis businesses be given a regulatory framework for adult-use public engagement similar to other craft products, such as breweries, wineries, and distilleries. It is time to integrate cannabis into the larger craft business community that makes Portland and Oregon so unique. We also hope that if there are necessary changes to state law in order to allow for greater flexibility in the types of events cannabis business can participate in, we can count on the city to be a good partner in advocating for these fixes with the legislature. The OCA understands that the city is under time constraints regarding a referral to voters for the fall election. However, the quick turnaround from when we learned about the tax proposal to the deadlines the city must work within were simply too quick for us to take a formal position at this on the tax at this time, although I will say it seems very unlikely that we would come out in opposition of the tax. Again, we appreciate and acknowledge Commissioner Fritz taking the time to meet with us and her good faith efforts to incorporate language into Section 3 of the tax proposal to create some funding to potentially support cannabis businesses or criminal justice reform and social service organizations trying to address the aftermath of cannabis prohibition. Hopefully, some of the meetings and discussions we have had over the last week and a half will lead to more open lines of communication between the city and cannabis businesses and result in greater partnership moving forward. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. And on the record, yes, we will continue to collaborate and to address the issues that you're concerned about.
We really appreciate that.
So, Matt and Commissioner Fritz, I just have a question off of your testimony. So let's put aside the question of the tax, and let's just go to the regulatory side. So we've adopted a regulatory framework. We're test driving it. As I read your testimony, you have some concerns about the balance we struck and perhaps some suggestions for how we could streamline that. What is our mechanism under this framework for doing that, Commissioner Fritz? What's the recap process, if you will, that applies to this? And what's the earliest time the council might be engaged in a conversation about how is the regulatory framework working? Do we need to streamline it or make any changes? And how would we get the information to make that judgment?
Thank you for the question. It would be the same as any of the other bureaus that we all are in charge of, that the commissioner in charge will work with the people who are concerned. And as you will remember, when we did the initial regulations last fall, I ran out of, was it five different hearings that we had and a number of different. As soon as we have something forward, we won't wait for a recap type package, which for those who are not land use geeks, that's for the development code, and it comes to us once a year. We won't wait for once a year. If we have something that needs to be amended, I'm committed to getting it in front of council as quickly as possible.
Just a food for thought. It seems to me, particularly since this is an experiment that's unfolding, that we may want to consider in the fall work session, talk about where are we, how is this working, and then if there are suggestions that are coming to all of us, either to you or through us for improvements, we could have a group discussion about that.
We certainly could. There's also the marijuana policy oversight team that meets regularly, that if you'd like to sit in on any of their deliberations, that's a mixture of industry and neighborhood folks who are going to be forwarding suggestions to me, like other advisory committees that we have.
I just want to second that. I would appreciate a work session because, for example, I wasn't aware until recently that Eugene has no regulations of marijuana whatsoever other than regulations that apply to businesses in general. So I'd be curious to hear from people in Eugene about whether that's caused any problems or whether it's working pretty well.
We can certainly do that.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I was just reflecting that if we did that in the fall, if after this tax hopefully is referred, we're not allowed to campaign on it on city time with city equipment like this video. But if we were to have an unrelated work session, that might be an opportunity for people in the public to learn more about the program without talking about the ballot measure. So, yes, we have one final panel, and that is Rachel Banks, the Director of Equity Planning and Strategy at Multnomah County Health Department, and Mary Wacker, the Chief Executive Officer of DePaul Treatment Centers. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and members of the council. For the record, my name is Rachel Banks, and I'm the Director of Equity Planning and Strategy for the Multnomah County Health Department. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for the opportunity to be here today to provide testimony on Portland's marijuana tax resolution. Multnomah County Health Department supports the City of Portland in its inclusive process and consideration of the marijuana tax resolution. We appreciate the opportunity to speak from the perspective of public health and your consideration of equity impacts and opportunities. Over the past year, Multnomah County Health Department staff have been working closely with the City of Portland's Office of Neighborhood Involvement to promote a safe transition to marijuana legalization. We're eager to continue this partnership with the City of Portland to determine effective strategies for protecting the public's health. Last fall, you may remember our health officer, Dr. Jennifer Vines, addressed you all regarding Portland's marijuana time, place, and manner ordinance. At that time, Dr. Vines shared our public health priorities for marijuana legalization, which include public safety, youth prevention, and individuals' health, including things like treatment for addictions, health harms due to smoking, and accidental poisoning. Some of the public health issues that we've been tracking post-legalization include emerging science regarding driving under the influence of marijuana, accidental poisoning, and the youth's use of marijuana and their perceptions about its health impacts. Though there's still a lot we don't know about marijuana health impacts, we do know that driving under the influence of marijuana increases the risk of crashes. In a driving simulation study, drivers who had ingested both marijuana and alcohol were particularly impaired. We also recognize the challenges that law enforcement faces in the field when testing for driving under the influence of marijuana. We believe this highlights the need for outreach and education as a strategy. In Multnomah County, 9% of 8th graders and 21% of 11th graders reported using marijuana in the past month. This is slightly higher than the state of Oregon and in the nation overall. 2/3 of 11th graders said it would be easy to get marijuana if they wanted to, and this was prior to marijuana legalization. We know that teens think that more of their peers are using marijuana than actually are, and clearly there's much work to be done to reach youth. We've also been in close contact with our colleagues in Colorado, Washington, and Alaska as best practices for protecting the public's health in light of marijuana legalization are rapidly being developed. We would welcome the opportunity to share what we have learned from our colleagues and the scientific literature. And given more time, we would also welcome the opportunity to share challenges and gaps that we've seen in folks getting the treatment that they need. Once again, we compliment the City of Portland in selecting mental health as an area that needs more resources. We know that advertising and media campaigns are effective platforms for marijuana education. And we welcome the opportunity to work with you as the local public health authority with the City of Portland as you refine your considerations. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony and would be happy to follow up with any questions you may have.
Thank you. We really appreciate your partnership and your shared commitment. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Marie Wacker. I am the Chief Executive Officer for DePaul Treatment Centers. At DePaul, we serve about 2,400 individuals a year and their families with comprehensive substance use treatment and mental health treatment. In fact, 20% of our 2,400 people are the city's homeless. We offer the full continuum of care from medical detox to residential to day treatment and outpatient services. We believe that addiction is a disease and treatable like any other, and in fact, treatment works like treatment does for any other disease. We employ about 170 people, and our budget is about $13 million. We have three locations, two of which are in the city. Our adult location is located at 13th and Southwest Washington downtown, and our youth facility is located at 42nd and Northeast Killingsworth. I am here to support the council's vote to refer a ballot. 90% of adults addicted today first began using under the age of 18 and half under the age of 15, according to the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids. At DePaul's youth facility, we serve kids 12 to 17 years old. 61% of those kids coming into treatment have a primary drug of choice of marijuana. We anticipate, although it's too early to tell, there's a slight uptick in vaccines legislation, about 1 to 2 percentage points, that this percentage will rise due to the legalization of marijuana and the resulting declining belief among youth regarding the risks associated with marijuana use. Anybody can tell you, if you look at examinations of the human brain after years of marijuana use, there are changes in the physical brain itself. The cost of providing youth treatment for us is substantial due to the high regulatory requirements for child caring facilities. Currently, DePaul loses $102 a night for every child in our care, which amounts to over $770,000 a year. Consequently, we work actively to cover this gap because we believe in treating kids and we want to keep them from entering addiction as they become adults. So therefore, we are in support of this tax and its use toward helping to treat kids and adults who have a substance use addiction. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Thanks.
That completes our presentation.
So let's turn to the sign-up sheet, please.
I show 10 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Stacy Vallis, Mary Pavito, and Chris Winter.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Are you ready? Go ahead.
Or Stacy, whichever. Oh, well, I can start. My name is Mary Pivoto. I'm a Northwest Portland resident, and I appreciate the opportunity today to speak to this proposal. And I can understand why, you know, I come to speak to you, and you probably know I'm going to talk about air quality and why that may seem a little off topic in today's discussion. But I will tell you that right now, I think the urgency on clean air initiatives and the public health and safety that this issue of air pollution in our city and community are urgent and need us to be incredibly creative to find the resources to address the problem. You received testimony today from Oregon Environmental Council, and just to double down a bit on the problem, public safety and health issue of diesel pollution specifically, it's putting 90% of Oregonians at risk, and pretty much 100% of Portland residents are at risk of from 40 to 100 times healthy levels, cancer-causing levels, due to diesel pollution. The problem with diesel pollution is that it's a very fixable problem, except that it costs money. Our neighbors, both to the south and the north, have invested significantly more money at the same time over the last 15 years while Oregon has de-invested in this problem. So while we've seen significant investments from California, also Washington State, $58 million have been invested to change over 14,000 engine upgrades. In that same period of time, Oregon has only invested $4.3 million for 369 engine upgrades. And so it's critical that I think we always look for funding opportunities to address this problem. And I think it's critical, especially in this moment right now, that we consider the barriers on this these funding. And in the past, we have the opportunity today to support the state legislature to more aggressively address diesel pollution, which they are doing. But in the history, the city of Portland has not necessarily stepped up and said that it's going to help lead by example on the diesel initiatives through public contracting and clean diesel requirements. And specifically with regards to minority and women-owned businesses, these are the folks that operate probably the dirtiest trucks in our city. They're driving in our neighborhoods, and it's the area where we need the most funding opportunities because oftentimes they can't meet the capital requirements that the federal money requires of them to put up $60,000 towards the cost of a $120,000 truck. So we really need the city to look at funding opportunities for these small businesses, minority and women-owned contractors, and I see this as an excellent opportunity with a new tax proposal at the city to do just that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Stacy Vallis, and I live in Northwest Portland, and I'm here as a concerned citizen. I want to back Mary up on this notion that I would like to advocate that a portion of the revenues from the marijuana tax be devoted to dealing with a very serious air quality problem that our city and state have. I got involved with this issue in 1999. My sons then were 3 and 1, and I thought of Oregon and Portland in particular as sort of on the cutting edge environmentally. And I saw flyers in the neighborhood about the work that the local neighborhood association health and advisory committee had been doing, supporting, to monitor the air in Northwest Portland, which, as you know, is right on the edge of the industrial sanctuary and close to freeways. And I was just stunned by the, you know, hundreds of toxics in the air at relatively high levels, and I went to some neighborhood meetings and I got involved. I mean, my background is higher education, English and American literature. I have really no expertise in this except for what I got from going to meetings with DEQ and the Health and Environment Committee. And I was really so disheartened to learn how the system worked or didn't work that DEQ relies on self-reporting by industry, and there was an air pollution monitor at the post office in Northwest Portland that showed a suite of metals that was a signature for a steel factory. And there was a steel factory, ESCO, a few blocks away. But we were really, amazingly unsuccessful at getting anyone to think of having a fence line monitor. It was impossible to move on that. Oh, the pollution could be coming from any number of sources. And the DEQ can use its muscle with sometimes, I had experience with this, with smaller organizations that they actually don't even have regulatory discretion over. But I thought it was really scandalous how little was done to monitor and regulate, have oversight over larger polluters. And I think we've seen repeatedly, that local action can really drive larger statewide change, say with minimum wage, paid sick leave. And local activists like Mary and her group and neighborhood groups have really moved this issue. And they're, without this local activism, we wouldn't have much change. And I just want to encourage local government to be a partner in this. And I think that can have an enormous leverage. And I hope you'll consider using some of the revenues for this serious problem.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, for the record, my name is Chris Winter. I am the co-executive director of the Cragg Law Center, public interest environmental law firm based here in Portland. We provide legal aid for the environment for communities across the Pacific Northwest. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon. I'll try to be brief. In February of this year, our collective consciousness here in Portland changed overnight with the release of information from the U.S. Forest Service about dangerous levels of toxics in the air that we breathe day in and day out here in our city. But for many of us, this was not new information. We had known for years that communities were struggling with dangerous air quality in Portland. And in fact, most often, it is our communities of color and low-income communities that suffer the worst. And for years, when those communities went to DEQ to complain about headaches and nausea, breathing problems, sleep problems, DEQ would say to them, "We don't collect air quality data in a way that might point the finger at an individual facility." But of course, now we know one bad actor can cause serious problems for its neighbors. So what was it that changed so dramatically in February for all of us? It was data collected by a different agency that finally shed light on what was really going on here in Portland. So the state is now slowly starting to collect more data, and virtually every place it looks, it finds more dirty air in our city and within our city boundaries. So decades of regulatory neglect have left us with a very serious health threat affecting the most vulnerable members of our community. So these experiences should be a lesson for all of us that we cannot let these responsibilities fall on any one agency. We are very concerned that the state is moving too slowly and that we are seeing the same patterns of behavior recurring already. But no matter what efforts the state makes now, we must build the capacity of local and regional entities to protect our air quality and the welfare of the citizens who live in Portland. So this new source of revenue can help to address an urgent and persistent public health threat in our city. And of course, the cannabis industry also produces its own waste streams, air pollution from glassmaking, water use and water pollution and pesticides. And so it makes perfect sense for a portion of the cannabis tax to be dedicated to the intersection of environmental protection and human health. So in conclusion, the health and safety of our children, our elders, and our most vulnerable depend on our efforts. And in a city that prides itself on sustainability, we desperately need our city government committed to ensuring that our air is safe to breathe for everyone. Thank you.
Next three are Pam Ali, Mary Ann Schwab, and Doug Carson.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Pamela Lee. I hope the voters pass this tax in the fall if you indeed choose to put it on the ballot. You've been considering today a wide range of social concerns, and I too hope that you consider some physical environmental concerns. I live in North Portland, where I've been in the same house since 1995. What I've handed you is a current copy of some of the times I know that I've complained to the DEQ about strong industrial odors inside my house, even in the winter, by the way. And summer's coming when we want to keep our windows open. It doesn't represent all the times I was awakened and sickened by strong odors, but it's fairly complete. I fill this log out when I contact the DEQ at the same time. My pleas to the DEQ, at least tell me what faceless enterprise is inundating my house with asphalt odors, making me ill, have gotten only three responses since 2012, and I believe that the log begins in 2012, but I was complaining before that. The last one was the most extensive. A DEQ employee in Bend was asked me quite a few questions, but offered no information. I don't know how somebody in Bend could possibly be informed about what's going on in Portland. The longer this goes on, the madder I get. I'm amazed at the patience of my neighbors who are dealing with the very arrogant and rude people at Daimler. Many of these neighbors have young children, and I cannot imagine how they must worry about their children's future. And if any of you folks smelled what you can smell when Daimler releases this awful paint, you would know. you wouldn't just want to sit there. You'd want to do something. One more thing. What is in our air also assaults our soil and river. Anyone who is serious about being a clean or a green community must begin with the air. And the air is something that it's the first thing we do when we come out of our mother is we take a breath of air. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mary Ann.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Mary Ann Schwab, Community Advocate. Yes, Commissioner Fritz has worked with the cannabis industry representatives, neighbors, city staff, and other members of council to shape a proposal for how the projected revenue will be spent. It is important to me that there is a nexus between the purpose of the tax and the benefit to those who will be paying it. The city doesn't have enough money to address the public health and safety impacts of the drug and alcohol consumption. This tax would provide revenues for those purposes, as well as support new businesses and job training. I think it's really important that we erase so many of our young people are in jail just for smoking and marijuana, and that I'm so pleased that you've already started to address that. So please do not take money from these purposes. I believe doing so would take away the nexus and make the ballot measure harder to pass, so I'm asking Council to stick to the uses of these as proposed. In my humble opinion, the 3% tax on revenue marijuana is well-